Are you ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Thanks for tuning in to the Niche Website Builders Show. In this episode, we speak to Mark Webster. Mark is one half of Authority Hacker, who create great courses for niche website builders. They also publish great content on their own podcast and YouTube channel. In this episode, we speak about when Mark first discovered the world of niche websites, the digital agency he ran with his business partner, Gail, before starting Authority Hacker, some of the successes and failures they've had building niche sites over the years, including a mid-six-figure exit. We speak about quality content and what that means for niche websites going forward. We speak about some of the new websites that they started in 2020. We also speak about their courses AH Pro and the Authority site system that they recently refreshed, and a whole lot more. If you're listening to the podcast version of this show, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please rate and review, as that will allow us to create more of these shows. If you're watching on the YouTube channel, please subscribe and click on the bell to be the first to know when we publish new episodes. Thanks and enjoy the show.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show, and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Show. Today we're going to be talking to Mark Webster from Authority Hacker. Mark is a co-founder of Authority Hacker. To use the phrase from their website, Authority Hacker create actionable education for website owners. They are known for their high-quality courses and go in-depth on how to create, grow, and monetize authority sites, and they set the bar for production value. They also publish fantastic content on their podcast and YouTube channel. I'd like to take the opportunity to say, how's it going, Mark?
It's going good. And for anyone that watches our podcast, that's a regular segment on the show where I usually have to entertain my business partner with some like fascinating tidbit from my life, such as the new socks I got for Christmas, which we talked about this week. But I was totally unprepared for that, Mark. So I'm just going to say it's going good and I've got nothing for you. I'm sorry.
That's cool. That sounds about normal. I mean, you think people would get bored of that. I don't get bored of it. Like, I think it's just Gail's pure joy of being able to ask you each week, knowing that it either annoys yeah. you or whatever. But I don't get bored of it.
It really annoys me. Like it's the most anxiety I have throughout the week, no doubt.
Well, I've just backed it up for him now, so he'll continue some more through 2021 at least, right? Okay, so yeah, so thanks for taking some time out of your day. I mean, obviously, a lot of people listening will already have heard of you, but for those that haven't, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So my name is Mark. I'm the co-founder of Authority Hacker. Do you want me to talk about me personally or like the business? Because, you know, those are two very different things.
Well, we're going to just a summary of yourself and the business, I think, but then we'll go into what interests you outside of work.
So I've been doing online marketing since 2008. I'm very much like a systems process kind of guy. So while I know a lot about SEO and link building and content creation, these kinds of things, where my strengths tend to lie is in taking an idea or a concept and like implementing it and scaling it and making it run very efficiently and gaining a lot of learning from that, which just so happens to be a skill which is very, very important to to do well with online marketing and with running authority sites. So my business partner and I, we run authorityhacker.com, where we teach website owners how to do marketing, how to get into it, how to grow their website, how to do all the kind of SEO link building, plus some of the softer side of things like hiring and process management, that kind of thing. We also, in addition to that, run a small portfolio of our own websites. So we walk the walk as well, and we use a lot of the learnings from that to inform the education which we create on Authority Hacker. We have a blog, we have a YouTube channel, we have a weekly podcast. We've been going for almost 6 years now. I think we have 250 odd episodes. That's basically it in a nutshell. And for anyone who's wondering where my weird accent's from, I'm Scottish, but I used to live in America. So I have this weird hybrid thing going on.
For sure, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't put you as Scottish for sure. But yeah, you're in Edinburgh, right?
No one will pick it. Yeah.
Cool. So, okay, before we dive deeper into kind of the stuff you're doing with Authority Hacker and the affiliate sites, which we're definitely going to cover off, what are some of your interests kind of outside of work? What keeps you going?
So my dog is my number one interest at the moment. I got a puppy a year ago, and like my life has just changed since then. He's awesome. Like I love him a bit. So I spend a lot of time with him. I live kind of in the suburbs now, so we can kind of go out for long walks in the woods, and that's kind of fun. Aside from that, I'm a big gamer. So Ooh. I used to play MMOs religiously, like 16 hours a day kind of thing. And I think a lot of those skills from playing games kind of do translate quite well to online marketing. It's quite sort of grindy in that sense. Aside from that, I love board games, things like Catan. I'm always looking on Kickstarter for new
Pandemic.
Cool, interesting ones. Yeah, I bought Pandemic for my family this year, so we've been playing that quite a lot. Very great game as well. Yeah. One of the best co-op games I've played. Ticket to Ride's another good one I like as well. And that's it really. Like I'm quite interested in like personal finance and personal development. I go to the gym a lot this year. Just fairly normal. I'm into football, but I don't really have a team. Just follow it.
Wow, that's cool. So I always get abused for having more than one team, Jim, sometimes. So having no team, like, now that's some other kind of abuse.
Well, I'm from Scotland, so there's not really like my team is Aberdeen, but they're terrible and like they're not on TV and you can't really follow them. So it's like,
Cool. Okay. So when you first roll right back to when you first started discovering the online world and making money online and realizing it was kind of a real thing that you could potentially do and it wasn't some kind of hoax, it was something you could kind of start working to. When was that? How long ago was that?
So in 2007, I used to play an MMO called EVE Online, and one of the guys in my, it's called a corporation, but it's like a guild team, he did affiliate marketing, and he did this full time and made like quite a bit of money from it. And he kept telling me about it, and it was a thing, and I kept asking questions, but he wasn't very good at kind of articulating how he did it or like how it worked and stuff. So I knew it was a thing. And around that time I'd searched for various forums and just tried to learn a little bit more about it. But everything I found was like a long sales page with like pictures of Ferraris on it and like, hey, just buy this and you'll be a millionaire on Tuesday. And it really put me off. Yeah. So for a year or so, I didn't get into this. Then it was 2008. I picked up a book. I think it was like Affiliate Marketing for Dummies or one of those. And then I've been reading a few forums and kind of learning from a few people, or I thought I was learning from a few people, and just kind of getting my feet wet and figuring out how it all worked. And then I was just like, okay, well, I'm just going to build a website and kind of try some things out and see what happens. And that's when I started really learning stuff being forced to figure stuff out. It totally bombed. I made I want to say like less than $100 from that first website. I spent way more than that. So it was a total loss in that sense. But the education and the learning I got from it and the belief that, hey, there's something in this was invaluable. And it took me a couple of other goes. So like the second website I tried after that also completely failed. But I learned more stuff, and then I was eventually able to iterate and until I sort of failed enough times, I managed to stumble on the correct way of doing things.
So did you have a normal job before that? Or yeah?
Yeah. So I had the standard. I went to school. I was told to get good grades so you can get into university here or college. So I did that. Got to university and like, oh, study hard, you know, get your diploma, get your degree, and you'll be able to get a good job. So I did that, interviewed a bunch of places, joined the graduate scheme at an insurance company, like a big sort of typical global boring office environment, in their project management IT department. And within the first 15 minutes of arriving there, just like the entire world's structuring of school, university, careers. It felt like the glass illusion had just shattered. I was like, is this it? Is this like what my life is going to be like that, like for the next 40 years or something? I was looking at people who were 20, 30 years older than me in the department. And I was thinking, I just really do not want to be like these people, like in that time. So really that day I started, you know, semi-panicking, but already plotting my escape and trying to figure out what I was going to do next. Part of that was I tried looking for other jobs and, you know, more creative fields, but I was really just trying to escape that rather than, you know, trying to go directly towards something else. So eventually after like a year and a half, when I got my second bonus, I just quit and I bought a one-way ticket to Southeast Asia, went traveling for a bit, backpacking. Became a scuba diving instructor for a bit and spent all my money and just like had a great time. But that experience kind of like forced me to figure out how to make some money so I didn't have to go back mm-hmm. home. So eventually I stumbled on to online marketing again that way. And I ended up working for someone else for a while and then starting my own thing and then kind of took off from there really. But yeah, typical job experience. Hated it. Wasn't for me. I could never ever go back to working for someone else now, ever.
Yeah, it sounds like to me, you know, you never really had that fear of, you know, I've got a secure, safe job and I need to jump. It's like, you know, you took a holiday before you kind of delved into it.
I mean, basically, but there's not really, you shouldn't really have any fear, because if I'd done everything necessary to get that job in the first place, it wasn't luck. It was because I was like capable of doing that job. So what's the worst thing that happens? I go away, have a great time, do all this stuff, come back and do something broadly similar to what I was doing before. It's not like they're going to run out of jobs anytime soon. So
that's so true. And I think
there's not really a risk.
Yeah.
In that sense.
I think a lot of people don't think about it, but only in retrospect. So it's kind of interesting that.
Yeah. I mean, we see all the time, you have two schools of thought of people who are thinking of like quitting their job to try this. You have the people who need to save up like 12 years of income before they'll even consider dropping down to part-time. And then they have the people who are like, well, if I just quit now, it'll force me to figure it out and kind of get going that way. So most people fall into one of those two brackets, I find.
Yeah, I agree. I think the older you get and the more responsibilities you have, the harder it gets to be brave in that respect. But yeah,
obviously. Yeah. Yes, absolutely true. I mean, I've got a wife now, got a puppy, probably going to have some kids in the next few years, you know, got a mortgage and all that. So it's different when you're 23 and have nothing really to tie you down. So
sure. Cool. So I know that before, you know, you started Authority Hacker, you ran an agency for a while. Tell us a little bit more about, yeah, you know, what kind of things did you focus on at that agency? What, you know, what kind of clients did you have?
Sure. So it was an SEO agency, first and foremost. At the time when we started it, I was working for an American web design company, actually on Odesk, which is what Upwork is now. So I was doing sort of website project management, client management, that kind of stuff. And my business partner now, and still back then, Gail, he was working for an SEO agency as kind of like a fresh recruit. And he was, but he was really, really good at it. And I think it was like one of my mom's friends had a chalet somewhere that they were renting out, and they wanted a website made for it. So like I was going to do the website, Gail was going to do the SEO. And then we were just like, well, why don't we just turn this into an actual business and just find some more clients and whatnot. So we did. We just sort of fumbled our way through. We'd take anyone who wanted any kind of website, any kind of SEO, any kind of online marketing. We'd figure out how to do it, and we'd serve them. Was definitely not the best run business in the world. Made a ton of mistakes, ton of hiring mistakes. Got an office that was way too big for us. Had no kind of standardization in our offering. We would just give everyone what they wanted and end up with a lot of bad clients, a lot of unprofitable clients. And the business, while it sustained us for sort of 4 years or so, it didn't actually make all that much money in profit, but it enabled us to do a bunch of other stuff. So, I mean, at one point we were working with Nigella Lawson, who's like a famous chef here in the UK. We had Macy's, the department store in the US, Atari when they were around. We worked on a big project with Expedia for a bit. So we were doing like high-end stuff, but also like your local wedding DJ in the south of England, or you know, some family holiday rental kind of business, and everything else in between, really. So it was primarily doing SEO for those businesses, a little bit of web design, a little bit of ads sometimes as well. But yeah, mostly kind of SEO.
Yeah, I mean, you say you fumbled your way through, but I mean, you grew to a reasonable size, right? How many staff did you have by the end?
Yeah, so we had just over 30 people at our peak in an office in Budapest where we were based. And that was, yeah, a bit of a nightmare, because we scaled, but we scaled all our inefficiencies. And so there were so many just broken processes, and it's made us really careful about who we bring into the business now, and that we actually need the person. The thing with an agency is you often have to grow your staff in order to meet the demands of new clients that want to come on board. So we were quite pressured to bring new people in to meet that demand. Whereas now, with the current business model, we do get onto that a little bit later. We're much more careful, and we will only bring in like really good people if we're super happy that they're going to fit in. And we've made sure that we've automated our processes rather than just throwing money and resource at it. But you're right. It was a really good learning experience for us, because we had to react to so many different things, and we got a lot of exposure to different types of businesses. You know, I had several hundred people's websites analytics at one point. So, you know, you really got to see like what was working and what didn't work, and got a lot of ideas. And that's really helped us even today with some of our content and link building concepts that we do.
Okay. So how did you go about getting new clients? What was your marketing tactics for that?
I wish I could say we had like a strategy for that, but it was our biggest weakness is that when we started the business, there was actually a third business partner, and he was the sales guy, and he brought in a lot of new business to begin with. But it didn't work out. Like, the emotions between him and Gail were not good. So the like, it was an amiable split and all that, but he ended up leaving. And then it was just me and Gail, but neither of us are natural salespeople, so we didn't really do a great job of it. We got a lot of referrals from existing clients. We hired a couple of salespeople, and they were sort of heavily incentivized by commission. And there's actually three people we hired in total. Two of them completely bombed, didn't work out. One of them was a terrible human being and like really bad to work with, but he made a lot of sales and did really, really good things for the business that way. So that sustained us for a while. And we fell into this kind of model where we had our agency based in Budapest in Hungary, which is certainly much lower cost than, you know, Western Europe or the US. And we still had quite good people, and the processes, some of the processes we built were working very well, and we were actually getting results for people. So we were kind of able to offer semi-outsourced pricing, but like almost the same quality work as an onshore agency could do. And it's about better than many onshore agencies could do. So that was, that ended up being like a big kind of selling point for us. And a lot of agencies from the UK, Australia, US would basically farm all their work out to us, and they would just be like the client represent. They would bring the client, and we would do all the work and all the interaction. We would kind of white label our service as if it were them. So that worked really well, and that kind of sustained us for a while. So we had all these different strategies that each made up, you know, 20-25% of how we got things in. But were I to do it again, I would not do that. I would pick one approach and just really make that work and kind of start saying no to a lot more clients that the ones come on board.
Cool. Makes sense. So moving on to the Authority Hacker business, and how does the split in work work with you and Gail these days? Like, how, you know, and how big is your team there?
So it's a good question. We get asked a lot, and it's really difficult to articulate how we do things, because often in startups, you'll have like a business guy and like a tech guy or something. The nature of what we do is very much like overlapped, but it's still very clear. Whenever something comes in, I'll know like, all right, that's Gail will take care of that, or I'll do it. Roughly speaking, Gail is the mad scientist guy who sits and works away and comes up with new concepts for how to do things. And, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we could do this? And then he'll just go away and make a very messy concept that's like just all over the place and somewhat poorly thought out, but ultimately quite brilliant in the idea. And then I'll come along and be like, okay, you know, this is wrong. This is wrong. We need to change this. Let's tweak this. Let's fix this. Let's make a process for this. Let's bring in someone. Let's outsource this process. And then suddenly it's working very, very efficiently and smoothly. So that's kind of like defines our relationship. We're both quite good at the business side of things. So we both have a business background, like in university. So we kind of get that side of things. And we've both been doing SEO for, you know, 11 plus years now. So we both kind of understand the concepts there. I would say I'm stronger at, you know, people management and processes and systems, and he's probably more geeky into like the technical SEO and keyword researchy type cool. stuff.
Makes sense. And who else do you have in the team? And what roles are they?
So our team is really small. We have four other core team members, so who are full time and work across our websites, and then we have, I want to say, like 10 to 12 freelance staff as well. And that's a lot of content creators, writers. We have, you know, the guy that edits the podcast, a video editor, graphic designer, the usual kind of people that you would expect for a business like that. But we've, having come from that environment where we had 30 people and just it's such a nightmare managing a huge team like that. We made a conscious effort, like, let's just get fewer people, but let's get really good people. And what I've consistently found is that if you find one really good person, they can do the work of like four or five average people.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. I used to work at Microsoft, and I think they did a study that, specifically based on developers, and I don't know how they define good versus bad, but essentially they said, you know, one brilliant developer is worth 11 average developers, you know, in terms of productivity.
Yeah, I totally believe that, because it's not even just the work that they do; it's the environment, the culture that they create as well. If you have on the reverse end one bad or like negative or someone that just doesn't know what they're doing, that there's like a poison that kind of infects everyone else and brings everyone else's efficiency and progress down significantly. So you have to be really, really careful about who you work with when you're small business.
For sure. Cool. So yeah, I wanted to move on to some of the sites you've built in the past and kind of talk a little bit around kind of some of the stories there. So firstly, I guess it'd be good to talk about Health Ambition. And I'll let you kick off and share some of the story around how that started.
Yeah, so back when we had this agency, we kind of realized in sort of the latter part of it that working for clients was not our thing. And we had all these skills, like, why not just build our own website? So it was like, I think it was a January, it was maybe 2012, maybe 2013. we came in and we're like, all right, we have to start this, like, got a few people together, let's get this website up, like, what niche shall we go into? And the niche researcher was like, literally, oh, here's a whiteboard, what niche should we go into? Oh, how about health? Health, yeah, sounds good. Let's do it. Okay, cool. So we made a health website. It really wasn't much more thought out than that, which is definitely not the way I advise doing niche research these days. Like, just getting started is a bad idea. But basically, we started the website, got a bunch of content created for it. Did, you know, obviously did the keyword research, created content, started doing link building. And we were still this wasn't our main focus. We're still doing our agency at the time. And so we started growing the site kind of in the background. And after a year, when the next January came along, after New Year's, a lot of people are obviously interested in health and losing weight and New Year's resolutions and all that stuff. So the website really took off at that point. And then we started monetizing it with ads and Amazon affiliates and a few other affiliate products that we were recommending on ClickBank, like courses and stuff. And so throughout the next year, it just really took off revenue-wise and made us see like, oh, holy shit, you know, there's something in this. So at that point, we then decided, okay, maybe it's now time to start selling off, shutting down the agency. So that took another year or so to sort of complete that process. And then we were going full on our authority sites. We'd started authorityhacker.com in the meantime as well, to kind of document all that. But with Health Admission, just sort of grew from there. And I would say that there was a few sites in that space at the time which were doing really well, like Wellness Mama and Dr. Axe. You know, Dr. Axe had 20 million visits a month or something like that, and huge team. I have no idea how much they were making, but it would have been an incredible amount. So we just kind of like had thrown the site together, and, you know, link building was very easy back then. There was hardly anyone else doing it, hardly any competition. So we were able to grow our domain authority like stupidly high very, very quickly. And it worked really well for quite some time until 2018. I think it was when the Medic update came along. So funny story, but we were actually about to sell Health Ambition in May before this Medic update. But like the price we got, the valuation we got, like wasn't like we thought. Oh, we could get more for that. let's just, you know, build it up a little bit longer and or let it go a little bit longer. But basically, Medic came along and just wiped it out completely. And you know, in hindsight, rightly so. The reason for that, I think, is because there's this, when it comes to health, there's kind of certain areas, and the one where Dr. Axe, Wellness Mama, and Health Ambition were in was very sort of pseudoscience-y based. And by that, I mean there were articles on our site talking about essential oils and like all the benefits that they have and how juicing can help improve your skin and eyesight and all this kind of stuff. And we weren't like consciously trying to misinform people to make a profit or anything like that. We really didn't know any better because we're not health experts. And the writers who were health experts were just kind of this kind of natural health way of thinking, I guess, and they didn't pay too much attention to the evidence-based side of things, which I think ultimately was the reason why our site and those other sites got completely knocked off their pedestals. And you have sites now like Healthline, which just dominate everything, and it's, you know, their content is just straight up better than ours or any of the other sites was back then. So Google probably did a good job there. But unfortunately for us, because we'd made that a public case study for so many people, there people still to this day will have someone posting in like our Facebook group, oh, I see Health Ambition lost like 95% of its traffic. What happened there? But we've told the story many, many times, but that's basically what happened.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's still a DR71. It's eroded a little bit, but it's still, I had a look as well and to add, yeah, insult to injury. It looked like it was starting to make a modest modest increase in traffic over the end of last year, and then December's update hit, and it just took another.
So I will say as well that the Ahrefs traffic for that site's like actually really quite inaccurate. At its peak, it was making, it was having like 500,000-600,000 visits a month. And I think Ahrefs shows like 120 or something. I'm not sure. And then it still gets a lot more traffic than Ahrefs says, but it's like it's completely a shadow of its former self. But when that all happened, I think even like a couple months before we got hit, we had stopped like actively working on it. And we literally haven't touched the site since then. It's just not worth recovering with like the opportunity cost of working on other projects or working on Authority Hacker. But you know, these things, it's the reality of life as a website owner. You know, you can be coasting along thinking everything is fine, and then next Tuesday, Google clicks its fingers and you lose most of your business and everything you've been doing up until that point. So there's an inherent risk in owning a website, in running a website, especially in buying a website. I mean, can you imagine if we had sold it then, someone had bought it, and then 2-3 months later, they'd got hit. That would have been a huge problem for them. It would have been good for us, but not for the person that bought it, unfortunately. So you have to be really kind of alert and careful about these things. Back when we had our agency, actually, we were doing a lot of gray hat SEO, gray hat link building for clients. And when the first Penguin update came along, we got a load of sites which got manual penalties, and there was no disavow tool then. It was just, there's no really no way to fix it. So we suffered quite a lot when that happened, and we made a conscious decision like let's go more white hat on that end of the spectrum. And let's try and not get Google penalties. Let's not try and trick Google too much in future. So that ethos is kind of played out. But even when you're trying to do that, as in the case of Health Ambition, you still can't avoid Google's wrath.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what's your kind of inherent belief is that, you know, would Health Ambition, if you put enough time into it, ever be recoverable? Or given that it's probably got a lot of pseudoscience backlinks as well, do you think it's something that's just dead for good? No.
Yeah, I think it would probably be easier to just start a new site, to be honest with you, because there's 1,200 or 1,500 articles on the site at the moment, and God knows how many links from these kind of neighborhoods. So you'd have to like disavow them all and get rid of most of the content and just deal with all that. When a website gets that big, it becomes very hard to manage like small updates that you need to apply to every single page, or things you need to change in your content. Like if you change the way you're writing your intros, it becomes a huge task to rewrite them all. So you have to be very careful with that. So it would probably just be easier to create a new site from scratch.
Yeah, cool. One last thing on Health Ambition is that I did take a look at the backlink profile, and I looked at kind of the highest ranking backlink on there, and it was from Microsoft.com, which was interesting. And I took a look at where it was coming from. So the page on the site is what the IRS counts as a business drive. And there's one piece in there, which says, if you stop for coffee or lunch during a business trip, blah, blah, blah. And the anchor is stop for coffee, and it links to Health Ambition, which is 7 negative effects of coffee. So
so that looks straight up like we've bribed some intern at Microsoft to put that in, but I promise you we haven't. So the entire time we built Health Ambition, we never paid for a single link on that site, first of all. We did do a lot of outreach-based link building, but anything which is, or most of the articles pointing to the negative effects of coffee article on our site are actually natural. So we wrote that article and we ranked number one for the keyword negative effects of coffee for a long time. And when you rank for an info article which has kind of like facts or information which might be useful in when other people are creating content, then a lot of writers will go to Google, type negative effects of coffee, find our article, you know, mention one or two of them, and then they'll end up linking to them. That's why that article also has links from like 9 of the Huffington Post sites around the world, and Yahoo News, and a bunch of others. It really got a lot of attention just from that, like not from the promotion we did, just from being number one for that kind of keyword. So I think what's happened is either they have some kind of like auto linking plugin, or I don't know what's happened. Someone who didn't write the article has been told to go and put links in it, and then they haven't like read the sentence. They've just said, "Oh, coffee. Okay, I'll get this one or something." At least that's what I assume that has happened.
Yeah, yeah. It's quite a funny link though. Excellent. So yeah, I guess the other site I'd like to talk about a little bit is the one that you sold. What was it, 2 years ago? 3 years ago now? For
2 years. 2 years,
ago. Software site. So yeah, tell us a little bit about that one.
Yeah, so that was a really interesting one, actually. It was a really fun, exciting project to work on just because it grew so quickly. So we had been aware of this niche for a long time. Like one of our friends was in real life was kind of involved in it in a slightly different way. And we were just looking for new sites to go into 2017-ish sort of time. And it was the best niche at the time, like highest potential revenue, lowest competition, bunch of keywords which were like really low competition, but good volume, only a few affiliate products, but like high paying ones. So we made this site, we had got a full-time writer on board, and we just went sort of full steam ahead with it. And it just took off like a rocket ship. I can remember we were doing an AHPro launch, and we were making, you know, like quite a lot of money in that launch, based on like the pricing and the number of things we're selling. But that week we made our first like $15, $20 sale commission on that site. And that commission was more exciting to us. We were like, Gail and I were talking about that a lot more than the launch numbers, just because it was like a new thing. So we had a full-time writer. We really went to town on the content, like making it better than not just kind of as good as everyone else, but like improving on it. We were doing all sorts of like software tests, and we had like better screenshots. We were making custom imagery for all our content. It was good. And then, yeah, we also did a lot of link building. We really focused hard on our skyscraper outreach for that site. We created a lot of info content on related topics, and it worked just an absolute treat. We got rid of all the ads and affiliate links from our info content. So when we were doing outreach, it was it didn't appear like we were a sort of commercial site. It looked more like we were kind of just a blog talking about techie stuff. And then, yeah, it just started taking off more and more. We ended up being able to negotiate our commissions up with one of the affiliate programs. So we like doubled our income from 1 month to the next, and it just kept growing and growing and growing. And then we were reaching this like plateau where we had taken over a lot of the sort of beginner intermediate sites. And then there was maybe six or seven just giant sites, 10, 20 times the size of us, you know, DR80 plus, who were above us. And so to start competing with them would have meant like, all right, we need to drop Authority Hacker and go full balls to the wall on this, which we weren't prepared to do. So we're like, well, if we just let it coast, then some other people are going to come and take it over. So we might as well. It's grown a lot as the trajectory is really good. So it would sell really easily. So we might as well sell it at this point. So we did, and we got like a really, really good multiple for it. And we ended up like sort of taking home mid six figure amount from that sale, which was, you know, always nice.
Cool. Very cool. You just reminded me of something. I think it was on your podcast and on your blog, but you spoke about something that just kind of got me thinking, was that the increase in commissions is higher than the increase in difficulty for SEO. Do you remember that? That kind of, mm-hmm. you kind of got a graph there, which is kind of, because you know people say always, you know, steer clear of challenging, difficult niches. You know, there's high commission kind of niches, but and when you kind of look at it in that perspective, actually maybe it is worth the effort. And
so that it's a good point, because one thing that enabled us to really get into that niche quite quickly was we found a keyword pattern for which had almost no competition, but which we could make affiliate commissions from. So even though the main, you know, product plus review keywords were insanely competitive, even when we got into it, we looked hard enough and we were able to find these kind of small out of the way keywords, which were much lower volume, but there was quite a lot of them. So when they all stacked up, it equated to, you know, a solid five-figure a month income.
Okay. So actually, so you did, amongst the competitive niche, you actually just found some less competitive keywords, essentially.
Yeah. And that's the case in most niches. There are these lower competition, lower volume keywords. And the trick generally is to find a kind of gold mine of those where you can repeat it. So I think for ours, we had the keyword, and then there was like one for each country. So we could have really like a lot of permutations of that keyword, and that each one would get, you know, 100, couple hundred visits a month or something. But because there was so many and there was so low competition, that ended up to, you know, thousands of visitors each month.
And is that site still going strong today?
Yeah, really well, really well. So they've like doubled revenue since we bought it. It was taken over by one of those six bigger competitors in the space, which made a lot of sense for them because they were probably on even higher affiliate commission rates. So they could come in and instantly just increase the revenue. But they had like, you know, PR agencies and they had a lot of like bought links and stuff that they were doing. So they came in and just did a bunch of stuff, and it took off like really, really quickly after they got their hands on it.
Nice. So that's the kind of outcome you kind of want, I guess. Not that you missed out on an opportunity, but you don't want to sell it to somebody and then it bombs. Like, that just doesn't feel good.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think as well, because they were in that industry and that was like all they did, they could give it more kind of like TLC than we probably could. So yeah, I don't regret the time we sold it. I think it was probably about the right time that we gave it to them.
I mean, clearly, you know, when you look at Health Ambition and, you know, Google updates, you know, there is, you know, the risk is real when building content sites, but, you know, my belief is there's still a huge amount of opportunity in that space. You know, where do you see the opportunities lie in kind of the coming years?
You mean in which niches or like
just in content, just
business
both. I think business models, but just building content sites in general. You know, do you think the end is nigh, or is there?
No, not even close. So content's gotten a lot better in the last few years. It used to be the case that you would Google most keywords, and it was a hastily thrown together article by some writer that wasn't really involved and didn't really care that much. And, you know, we could go along and beat any kind of content. More and more, though, the bar is being raised and people are learning how to create better content, better written content for their blog. Specifically what people want, but also what Google wants. So I've seen this kind of convergence of content structuring based, because a lot of people these days, when they want to write a review article about a computer mouse, they'll go onto Google and they'll look for reviews that exist already, and they'll look for what is covered in those reviews, how they're structured. Because if Google is ranking one article at number one, which is structured in this way, then maybe if you write something somewhat similarly structured, then you will stand a better chance than if you just go in and write it how you would naturally write and structure that article. So there's this like convergence of content, which I think it makes it easier in a way because it gives you a template for how to start. But from a user's perspective, someone searching in Google, you end up getting 10 results, which are broadly saying the same thing, even if that's not completely objective in the way it's created. So I think something will give in that sense. I don't know why Google will start to give more of a spread of content structuring and its SERP or something else. But that's certainly something which I'm acutely aware of and keeping an eye on at the moment. From a new user's perspective, someone coming into this for the first time, there are two ways of thinking about it. So a lot of people will say SEO is getting harder, but when I started in 2008, there were people on the forum saying SEO is dead, it's too hard, it used to be so easy, blah, blah, blah. So don't listen to the naysayers in that sense. I would say that it's gotten a lot easier to do the things you want to do to your website and to outreach, to find people's emails, to build links, to launch your WordPress website in one click. You know, when I first started, you used to have to like upload it to with FTP and extract it and like set this up. It was a nightmare, honestly. So you need far fewer technical skills to deploy your website and to make the changes you want today with like page builders and stuff. But the competition around keywords and content is definitely higher. So you just got to raise your game, because whatever someone else is out there is doing can always be improved on. So as long as you have that mindset of trying to do better than what's already out there, then you will always succeed. I think where a lot of people fall down is they don't want to do better. They want to do kind of just as good, almost, or like an 80% copy with like 20% of the effort. And that mentality is probably not going to allow you to succeed with a new site.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that really quite nicely moves onto what we was going to talk about next, which is some of the predictions that you made in your recent podcast and video. And actually, you know, you talked about the convergence thing as one of those predictions. But also, Matt Diggity talked about quality and content hubs being important. But I think that dovetail really well, actually, although you didn't mention it in the video, with your prediction of the internet becoming more honest. I think they're quite aligned in that, you know, naturally, if a more legitimate site is going to generally create better content because they care.
Yeah, where that kind of comes from is there's an increasing, like back in the day when I first got started in internet marketing, there were so many like people with absolutely atrocious courses. And if you go into weight loss or health, there are people selling diet pills left, right, and center and forcing you into subscriptions. If you're into kind of like personal finance, there was these really aggressive loan sign-up forms. And, you know, it was kind of a wild west out there. And a lot of internet users, especially less savvy people, tended to be older individuals. They were getting scammed or falling victim to all manner of nefarious activities online. Now that's like gradually, that the extreme stuff is gradually being reduced. The FTC's done a good job in some cases of kind of policing that, not so much in others. So what we're seeing now, I think, is a more objective type of content coming out. Particularly with reviews. And it's, to be honest, a lot of it's driven on YouTube, because I feel like the creators there are less about trying to like sell the product and more about trying to entertain you and keep your attention. And they can often do that by being really critical of people, of products, of exposing people, you know, these kind of not sensationalized, but semi-sensationalized thumbnails and clickbaity titles, but with a underlying message which is often inherently honest. And I think that is acting as a kind of driver for website owners, for content creators, for course creators, for product owners to care more about what reviewers and what other people are thinking, because they're being mm-hmm. honest now. In the past, all the affiliates would just say, oh yeah, 4.5 to 5 stars is really good. Throw in one kind of token negative thing to be honest or be balanced. Whereas now you have people who will actually get a product and say, yeah, this is terrible, don't buy it. And so product owners are having to adapt more to that and actually create better products. So they're kind of like being kept in check more. So because of that, I think that if you're out there creating content which is untrue, like you're saying, go take this diet pill and you'll lose 10 pounds next week when it's just sugar, then you're not going to be around forever. You're going to get found out, because the inherent intelligence and savviness of today's internet user is miles ahead of what it was even 5, you know, certainly 10 years ago. So that's why I think that focusing in on accurate and honest content is the correct long-term play.
Sure. I think definitely, you know, being honest, I mean, is something that you could do with any article. But when it comes to, you know, when we're talking about quality, do you think, you know, the fact that there's more of a focus on quality, that actually raises the bar for entry for people? Because, you know, creating quality content costs more. You know, if you want to go to the, to the nth degree on it, you could say that, you know, your quality content can only really come if you buy the product, you kind of test it, you know, actually physically test it against its competitors. You know, do you think that creating quality content means that the bar is going to be raised to a point where it's difficult to, for some people to enter if they're on a low budget?
No. So I think the bar, when you say the bar has been raised for new people, I don't think that's quite accurate. I would say that the bar is raised in certain areas for certain products, and rightly so. Like, I always have this Vacuum Wars, I think it is, website in the back of my mind. Really cool affiliate site about vacuum cleaners. And they buy all the vacuum cleaners. They have 10 different tests on different surfaces. They have thick carpet, thin carpet. They'll spread a precise amount of dust, and then they'll measure, you know, how much each vacuum cleaner picks up. So it's very sort of scientific, mm-hmm. and it's entertaining, but it's really good. It's also very difficult to compete against that, because you come in and you're going to have to either have a very high authority site, which you're not going to do if you're new, or you're going to have to make some kind of unique angle or some kind of content on their level, which is difficult to do. Now, I don't think that means it's difficult for in all niches for beginners necessarily. I think that just with certain products, the bar has been raised. I think a lot of people in the past would expect to come into a niche like vacuum cleaners, hire a writer, you know, pay them 3 cents a word, and then give them a keyword and get a 500 word article and expect that they would have a fair chance of ranking within a year for that product name. I mean, that's not the case anymore. You can't do that. But all beginners are not trying to create 500 word shitty articles about it just to rank quickly. Some certainly are, but so are some experienced SEOs and people I know who have been doing this for longer than I have. That's still kind of their mentality. So they will often say, "Oh, SEO is getting more difficult because you can't do it the way you can't do that the way you used to do." What we find certainly is when we go into a niche now, and I see this often with new people, but certainly with us, we go in and we really get involved in the space, and we try and learn as much as we can about it. It's not just like, oh, let's just outsource all the content. We're trying to understand what are the drivers of content quality here. What do people care about? We'll like talk to people. We'll read all of the content that the writers are doing. I mean, we certainly did not do that on the Health Ambition days. And by getting into the niche and really understanding it and becoming not an expert, because you're never going to do that in a short space of time, but becoming involved will allow you as a beginner potentially to have a leg up on the experienced SEO who's been doing this 10 years, because they're not willing to do that. So if you're willing to go that extra mile with your learning and your understanding and ultimately your content, then you can compete with someone who's been doing SEO for 10 years and beat them.
Yeah, I entirely agree. Okay, before we go into, I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the new sites you started. I know you started a whole bunch, but come on, one more of the predictions you mentioned was there's going to be more shit PR link building campaigns in the coming year. do you want to elaborate on that?
So I'm trying to remember what that was like. What did I mean by that specifically?
So it was you were saying that, you know, as outreach kind of becomes saturated, people are going to be looking for maybe more PR building opportunities.
Yeah. So we've been doing a lot of outreach for the last 5 years. We've been doing outreach since 2012, but we've been doing really a lot since 2015, and from 2015 to 2017-18, it was so easy and everyone would just say yes, and like you didn't have to pay for links, and it was the best thing ever. Since like in the last 3 years, it's gotten more difficult. It's still certainly possible, and for for Authority Hacker, we never paid for a link, for example. We are starting to explore that on one, at least, new site that we're working on at the moment, just because the niche like kind of somewhat demands it. But it's not necessary to pay for it in most cases. But a lot of people do, and there's this like race to the bottom. So you have these websites now which have like lists of blogs which sell links and how much they sell them for, and you can, you know, do all the transactions through that. And those are maybe the sites that you maybe don't actually want to get a link from because SEOs have ruined it in a way. Because this outreach-based link building is getting not ruined, but more difficult to get the volume of results that you need or your client needs, then I think that SEOs are going to move more into the digital PR space, which is really like untapped at the moment because it requires an inherently different set of skills that traditional link building does. By putting together one campaign is much more of a effort to kick off and difficult to certainly outsource the thinking and the strategy behind the campaign. You know, this is why PR agencies charge, you know, tens of thousands of dollars a month to their clients for this kind of stuff. But there have been a number of SEO focused people who have started to break into that area and seen really good results. And as SEOs do, they document and share everything. And then everyone else ends up doing the same thing, piling on, jumping on the bandwagon, but not quite doing it as well as they should be. And then this race to the bottom kind of comes through. So I'm not sure if this year we'll see digital PR campaigns available on Fiverr, but it wouldn't surprise me if in the next couple of years there'll be some people selling those or trying to peddle shit digital PR campaigns.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I mean, it's just the world we're in, right? It's ever changing. You got to adapt. You can't continue doing the same stuff again and again. So.
Sure.
So, yeah, I'm really interested to learn more about. You started like what, a handful of sites, 5-6 sites last year. Like, yeah, tell us a little bit about those. And
so we didn't start as many as that. Like a few of them were. So we've actually for a while had like a number of sites kind of on the back burner. Right. So these are sites that we've either started and you know made small pushes several years ago, or we bought a couple of domains last year, like drop domains essentially last year, and have like rebuilt some of those, and we're just kind of letting it go. We got given a website from one of these companies, kind of like yours, that creates websites for people and on drop domains. And so they built that. We did a video on it and stuff. But so that's one as well. That's actually surprisingly grown without us kind of touching it. So we certainly didn't start five new sites last year. We started two. But the other ones we've been working on are those kind of on the back burner, which we've now started to give a renewed push to. That now that we've sort of started to figure out some of our link building and content systems and yeah, just really have more budget and energy to be able to throw at them. Yeah. I would caution people about starting multiple sites at the same time. We've fallen victim to this in the past. I think 2 or 3 years ago, we started three sites at once in January, and two of them only lived till sort of March, just because when you split your focus so much in the early days, it's never a good thing. So we certainly don't start that many sites, but if we were to go all out on starting sites these days, what I would do is I'd like start one every at the start of each quarter, and then kind of like a lot of energy goes into like getting it to where it needs to be. And then when it exits that startup phase and goes into the kind of business as usual, like link building, content oversight, management, optimization, which is much more easy to kind of work on an ongoing basis. But yeah, we've seen sort of mixed results from our sites that we've been working on in the early days. I think there was some kind of like indexing issue with Google towards the end of last year. it's part of the reason why they removed the request indexing feature from
Search Console.
GSC. So the site we started before that, and a lot of the initial content has started ranking, and it's very low competition stuff, but we're seeing traction on it. But then there was this period from, I want to say, like October onwards, where we deployed a number of new articles and a bunch of new content, and that stuff seems to be just really slow to get going. We've just started pushing link building on that site a lot more now that we're back from the Christmas New Year break. So I'm hoping that's going to like kick things up a notch as well. One of the other sites was a site we actually started, I think like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And initially it had like, I would say, content that we didn't care about, which was, you know, we went to an agency, we said, hey, we have these 50 keywords. Can you write us 1,000-word articles about each? And like, yeah, no problem. They gave us it. We never read it. We threw it up on the site and we left it there. Over time, that site actually started to, we didn't do any link building. Over time, that site actually started getting more and more traction and started getting a somewhat decent amount of traffic. But it wasn't making much money because all the articles were unoptimized. A lot of the products which we were recommending on Amazon were out of stock or had like a new model had come out, so people weren't really looking for. So we saw there was an opportunity, like, actually, let's just kind of like fix the content and see where we land. So we hired an expert, like a professional in that space, to create the content and really rewrote everything, turned it around, and it instantly shot up to like $1,500 a month. And then we just started doing link building towards that site. This is one of the ones which we're actually thinking about doing some paid links for, because it's just, it hasn't moved like with free links. Like nobody in that space is, everyone's charging for links basically. Yeah. So it's quite a small niche, so it's been quite difficult to get relevant ones. So for the first time in our history since starting Authority Hacker, not for authorityhacker.com, but for this other site, we're looking at paid links now, which, to be honest, I think most of the industry is probably been doing that for a long time anyway. One other thing we did for that site, so it's an affiliate site monetized by Amazon and one other industry specific affiliate program, sort of 50-50, although Amazon actually makes, say, all the reviews have links to both, but Amazon makes probably 80% of the revenue. We've started adding ads to our site, even to the reviews, the roundup reviews, all the commercial content. And now the ads make over $1,000 a month. And it's had no negative effect on conversion rate or whatever. So that's like quite a good tip, even for commercial content. You can add ads and just suddenly make quite a lot more money. We're pushing that site a lot in the first quarter this year, and we'll see how it goes.
That's been my question, actually. Are they all of the sites that you have in your portfolio at the moment, are they all affiliate sites predominantly, or do you have some like pure informational?
We have one info site, which it's only an info site because we haven't added commercial content to it. I think that's the drop domain. Aside from that, they're all affiliate sites. But we're thinking, I'm not sure if it's going to be this year, but we're thinking in the future to start new sites, not with the intention of making them affiliate sites, but with the intention of making them product sites. So either having their own physical product or digital product, like a course or something, for these, because the revenue per visitor you get from affiliate sites is always limited, even in very, very high paying niches. You know, you're still probably only be going to be getting, you know, $300, maybe $400 per 1,000 visitors. Some finance sites I know will make a lot more than that, and there's maybe one or two other niches as well. But for above average affiliate niche, that's what you're looking for. For an Amazon niche, it's much, much lower, you know, certainly below $50 in most cases. But if you own the product, like there's no affiliate, there's no middleman in the transaction chain there. So you can push, you know, well over $1 per visitor, $1,000 per 1,000 visitors kind of thing, depending on price points and niche and conversion, but it's significantly higher. It also allows you to monetize info content in a way that you just can't really with being an affiliate. So I wouldn't say the affiliate game is getting squeezed more and more. It's just that I think a lot of affiliates are inherently lazy and don't want to create their own product because it's difficult and it's hard and you can often get it wrong. I mean, we've made products on Health Ambition in the past that have just completely bombed. That's a play that we're kind of have at the back of our minds at the moment.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because it's difficult, that might be where the opportunity is. So I guess that's where, you know, that's a different kind of research, looking for opportunities for products where the competition is low. So.
Yeah, it also opens up a lot of doors with like paid traffic as well. So you can run profitable paid traffic to a product, to a site where you own the product, but. In most cases, you can't really do that with being an affiliate.
So with these sites as well, have you done any diversification of the traffic sources, or is it all Google predominantly, or any social media or email or anything like that?
No, it's all Google. So Authority Hacker is the only site which is diversified, like in terms of like paid traffic and like the audience, the podcast, YouTube, all that kind of stuff. In the past, we've dabbled with Pinterest. Something we haven't really focused on for a while. I know that puts us in kind of all eggs in one basket, or most of our eggs in one basket with Google. But I'm not sure I agree with there's a lot of people in our industry who are dead set on diversification as like a safety mechanism. I think that small businesses who seek diversification often do so at the detriment of their own growth. So there's a significant opportunity cost of not going all in, and you know, when striking while the iron's hot, with your SEO, with your Google traffic, because if you're like, oh well, this site's doing really well, you have two options. Well, okay, let's double down, let's invest more money, let's grow it more, let's get more traffic, let's get more links, let's do more of what we're currently doing and we know that works. Or you're like, oh okay, well what if it all falls apart, I'll lose everything, I better start another site and, you know, get some traffic from Pinterest on that one or something. And so when you start that other site, you then don't do all the work you would have done to grow the first one, and because growth can often come somewhat exponentially, it means that you're potentially losing out on a significant amount of traffic or revenue at the end of the day. So I'm very conscious about not using the D word, diversification too much, because it's a very risky proposition to do for a small business.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's diversifying for diversification's sake, and there's diversifying because there's opportunity, in another space. So I agree with that. And I think, now, if you've diversified in other ways, if you've diversified in, you know, the different niches that you're in, for example, then, you know, for example, if you had 5 sites in the health niche a couple of years ago, that would probably be quite bad. So if you've kind of spread yourself there, it's a bit...
Well, it would, but if you knew how to build a health site and then you built 5 more, you would have made a crap ton of money while you were there, and you'd probably be sitting on a beach somewhere at this time. So you have to be really careful with that, because like I said, the opportunity cost of what you're missing out on not, you know, making hay while the sun shines is very significant sometimes.
Sure. Cool. Okay, so you've been pretty busy in the last 6 months or so, relaunching AH Pro and TAS. So yeah, for the people that aren't familiar with your courses and tell us a little bit what's the difference between those two courses and what you've done in the last 6 months for them.
Yeah, so I mean, we started Authority Hacker about a year after we'd started our first authority site. Been doing our agency stuff for 4 or 5 years at the time. And Authority Hacker is really a way for us just to document our processes, talk about marketing, geek out a bit, share ideas, and people liked it. Other people liked it, and it quickly grew into like quite a popular kind of site. For whatever reason, people like hearing Gil and I talk about marketing stuff. I still find that fascinating to this day that anyone cares. So as we were doing that, a lot of the teaching that we're doing on our blog, inherently people were asking for more. Oh, can you make a video training for this? So we did a few free things, and then eventually we decided to launch a course. And we didn't want to launch another, quit your job and make money online thing. So it was, didn't really know like exactly how we would teach that. And we liked doing more of the advanced stuff at the time. So we did that, and we launched a couple of products, and then sort of snowballed those into what is today Authority Hacker Pro. And the idea with that is it's a community with lots of other marketers who own websites. And we really wanted to like niche down and go for people who own websites. There are freelancers and agencies and stuff in there, and they can get a lot out of it. But we really have the website owner at the back of our mind when we're creating our content. So we wanted to create this community courses for these people, teaching SEO and broader online marketing, but also like the processes that you need to run an online business. So there's a lot on like managing content production processes, or like hiring writers and all this kind of stuff. So we started that, launching that in 2015. And throughout 2016, we had a lot of complete beginners joining Authority Hacker Pro. And it's not meant for beginners. It's meant because it teaches you how to grow an existing website, but people didn't have a website. I think we need to make something for these people so someone can like start a website the right way, because inherently most people, they start a website like I did the first time and just throw some stuff together and kind of figure it out hopefully along the way. So that's why we created the Authority Site System, or TAS, to be that kind of like beginner's training to get people off the ground, to start making money online. And then hopefully if they're successful and they make money online, then they'll then buy our advanced course so they can grow their site even higher. So like it benefits us if people do well from it as well. Now, one of the problems with running online marketing courses and creating education around there is it's an ever-changing environment. Like stuff changes fast. And I'm not just talking about the big Google updates or Amazon changing their commission rates or a new link building tactic, but little things like every other week, Ahrefs will go in and change their UI or add some new option and all. And while that's cool, it's a nightmare for course creators, because we get people all the time saying, oh, you know, I can't find this button here, but it's like, it's actually on the right instead of left. And yeah, it creates all sorts of havoc for us. Now, that is fine if you're an advanced user and you know you or I can figure out where the button would be. But if you're brand new, you know, you've never built a website in the past, then you know the publish button isn't where it's supposed to be or whatever else, then a lot of people get quite panicked about that. So it means we have to update the Authority Site System or beginner's course quite frequently. So this is our third iteration of it, where we start from scratch and build it again completely. And each time it seems to be getting bigger and bigger. We've made like 180 videos for this current one. And so we spent the last like 9 months or so, doing that. So most of last year was just creating videos and creating new training and figuring out like how to teach these things in like the best way so people understand and it's not too long, but it gets to the point, but they can do it, and which tools they should use and which ones are going to be affordable and which ones are going to last and all that stuff. So it may seem like, and I know a lot of people sometimes see people like us, oh, you do quite well from creating courses. I could create a course. I'm just going to throw some videos together and do that. It's like, it's like the swan, right? Or a duck, you know, swimming on the water graciously. It seems so easy and everything's perfect, but they're like, you know, paddling like their life depends on under the water, but you can't see that. So that's the reality of being a course creator, I'm afraid. Yeah,
cool. And I guess the AH Pro is made up a lot more of kind of separate blueprints as well, right?
Yeah. So TAS is a linear course. So it's like, here's where you start with nothing. Here's where you finish with a successful website. AH Pro is like you have a website. What do you want to work on? Here's 17 different blueprints, 17 different things you can work on. Like, oh, actually, I need to hire a new writer. So I'll go through the building your editorial team blueprint. And you'll go through that blueprint in a linear fashion. And the end of that, your outcome will be you have a process where you've hired a good writer following a structured process and they're good. Or it'll be, maybe you decide next week, oh, actually I need to do more link building. So you'll pick one link building blueprints and you'll implement that process in your business. It's very much structured on, the course is not so much like, here's all the information, but it's like, here's how to implement this. So here's all the templates, here's all the to-do system you'll need, or the Asana template, or, you know, whatever else it is that you need. So that's like what we say in our motto, is like, we make actionable education. That's the actionable side of things.
Cool. Okay. Well, we'll put some links down in the notes so people can find those courses easily. So just the last thing, I guess I assume you're not putting your feet up now, you've refreshed both these courses. So what are your plans for 21 and the kind of mid to longer term plan?
So the more I've been doing this, the more similar each year starts to become. When we first started, when we sold our agency, we first started doing our own sites. At the start of every year, it's like, oh, I wonder what will happen this year. And like, it could have just gone in any of like a million different directions. And there's like so many ideas that we wanted to do. But nowadays, our quarterly meetings are mostly about like, what are the things which we're currently doing, which we don't want to do anymore? So like doing fewer things, but doing those things more effectively. So this year is quite predictable. We'll be creating more content for our advanced course for AH Pro. We'll be building up some of these new sites, which we started or re sort of took over last year. Maybe we'll start a new site or a new project later in the year with the info product angle kind of at the back of our mind. I'm not sure. We've been doing a lot of, last year we did a lot of like YouTube stuff for Authority Hacker. So we've been growing our YouTube channel quite a bit, mostly just through the podcast, but we started dabbling in doing dedicated YouTube videos. There'll be a lot more of those coming out this year. I think we're going to release some of our new blueprints, new AH Pro blueprints, which we're creating this year as separate products. So sell them on their own and build a kind of like funnel around that. So we have to re-optimize rebuild our evergreen funnels, like Active Campaign, and sort all that stuff out. The webinars is a total nightmare. Set up proper analytics tracking for it. I need to figure out how to A/B test those things again. And yeah, just sorting our shit out basically, because there's a lot of stuff which is in a bit of a mess, and we had delayed fixing it because we were just so involved in building the Authority site system again last year. So hopefully this year we can start fixing those problems.
Awesome. Well, look forward to what you've got coming. I've always enjoyed your content and as a consumer of your courses as well in the past. So yeah, keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
And just like to say,
I assure you, I have no plans to stop anytime.
Well, that's good. Cool. Well, thanks again for your time today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Mark. Good to be on.
Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're listening to the podcast version of this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please rate and review, as this will allow us to grow our audience and create more shows like this one. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel and click on the bell to be the first to know about any new episodes that we release. Until the next episode, goodbye.